Live from the Pathway Studios in Johnston proper, you are Live from the Path.
And you're listening to Live from the Path, coming from the Pathway Studios here in the sweet, I don't know, swamps of Johnston proper. Here's what we got going on the show tonight. We're getting to see what's going on with the world. We got some What's Trending with Dan. Dan, give me a preview on what's trending in the world.
We got three things. We have a young woman who took her own life. That's been in the big news. We got Alex from Target. Y'all heard about Alex from Target?
No, I don't know anything about it.
Oh, nope. Yeah. It's hot. It started Sunday. That's how fresh it is.
Okay.
And Merry Christmas from Jesus.
That all seems, yeah. No controversy in that last one.
No, absolutely not.
I love it. All right, let's see. Also, Mike, what do you got?
We got an article that some guy put out that I have not screened, but I have read. that has to do with he took a survey of first-time guests visiting the church, and he gave out their top 10 reasons of why they won't go back.
Oh.
Does he tackle them in the parking lot?
Shoot.
You look upset. You're not.
Yeah, amazingly enough, he got him to sign up for some kind of list to participate in the survey. anyway, we're going to delve into that, see what we agree with, see what we don't.
I got to imagine that's pretty offensive, right? Like, if you won't go back to the church, but you're willing to participate just so you can express how poorly your experience was.
That's the world we live in, though. I mean, you don't. You very rarely get the positive comment card. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
people will take
true.
The time to fill out a your fries were old card, but they, you know, hey, that guy at the service desk was awesome. Doesn't happen real often.
No, that's true. That's true. Also, we're going to continue on number 9 of from Time.com, what I gained when I lost my religion. Last week was better health and better sex. Jesus ruined my health and my love life. And so we dealt with that last week. If you're interested to know our perspective on his I gained better health and better sex when I lost my religion, you can check out last week's show. This week, friends who are more fun. I gained friends who are more fun. So we'll tackle that. Also, new concept on the show. Here it is. Here it is, boys. Okay. I'm going to give you the solution to the problem. And then you have to try to guess what the problem is.
Booba.
Wait.
Yeah, I second
Booba. Booba as the problem?
Yeah.
Yeah, Booba's definitely the problem.
That seems all right.
This game's stupid.
Yeah, that took a real long time, Ben.
Okay, so I'll give that to you a little bit later. I'll give you the problem. You have to try to guess I'll give you the solution. You got to give me what the problem is, and then I'll tell you what I think the problem is. And it's got a little Pope-style advice vibe to it. It has some relevance and some things that I've noticed, some stuff's going on in my own life. So we'll see if we can give that a shot.
I feel like you've set yourself up to be right in that conversation.
I thought it. No, here's.
You're the only guy that knows the real answer.
Yeah, yeah, I would be awesome at it. I'm like the Alex Trebek of the Life in the Past.
It's like the Ben self-esteem hour. No, here's why you're wrong.
What's the premise of the Pope style? Is you telling everybody else what to do? I've just done it in a little bit more shifty fashion.
Agreed.
Point.
Agreed.
All right, let's tackle number 9. What I gained when I lost my religion. So there's a guy, the former evangelical, and he left his religion. And he gave a list of 11 things that he gained when his religion was lost. We've been kind of walking through those.
Hang on. Can I stop you here?
Yeah.
What is an evangelical? What does that mean?
What do you mean?
I don't know what that means. Like, when you say he was an evangelical, I don't know what that means.
Well, you say it means like they're not Catholic.
Okay.
Yeah.
They're,
so it's classification of what you aren't?
Kind of. I mean, it's just a Bible church.
See, I'm not the only guy that didn't know.
Yeah. No, that's true. That's a good question. Like, why don't we just say, What happened to good old Protestant?
I'm not really sure what that means either, to be honest with you.
Well, that means not Catholic.
That's okay. Non-Catholic. But then evangelical usually narrows it down a little bit more to like your Bible-teaching churches, and not your mainline denominations. It's generally not like your Lutheran or Presbyterian. Some of them might consider themselves evangelical, but there might be an evangelical Lutheran or something. They'll throw that
and so are the e-free churches free of evangelicals or... They are their freedom
because
is in evangelicism.
Generally, your what are we looking at?
Evangelical.
Evangelical. Thank you. Yeah, okay. I just went through.
Holy cow, Dan! That was like 30 seconds ago. We're talking about that.
Dan's dying.
He's mad. All right.
He's like 85.
My
aorist's
wearing off. generally, you're thinking of like your Baptists, your Evries, your Christian churches. You know, you're kind of generally more conservative-ish Bible, not political, but Bible conservative.
Here's the deal. Here's what I'm going
to
say about this.
High regard to the Bible.
I don't mean to get too much off topic here, but like I was talking to a gal that lives in the same town I live in, and it's a small town. I mean, there might be a couple thousand people in the town, maybe 1,500, and there's got to be 5 or 6 churches in our town, and like they were talking about you know, going to a different church, and they thought they'd kind of explore around, and I thought, you know, whatever happened to the days of Acts when we're like, hey, go to the church of the town. The Church of Jesus, there's only one, and it consumes the town. It's the Church of whatever, you know. But then there's like 6 different churches in one town struggling to stay alive, you know what I'm saying, with stuff that they bought 100 years ago. And I'm like, what I would really want is to a guy to stop at the local gas station, traveling through town, decides he's got to stay for the night and say, where's church? They're all of them are down there. All of them are down that way. That's where the Church of Jesus is in this town, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm like, man, it's just, I don't know, I wish for that. I think
that would be
awesome.
Great, but the problem is some churches, like, you're thinking through the filter of, hey, can we get together and read the Bible? Not all churches are interested in that. There tend to not be the evangelicals.
Okay, I'm with you.
Okay.
Not Catholics.
But, I mean, I'm not, like, I don't want to down any other churches. I'm just saying, your evangelicals like the Bible. They want to do what it says. They might have different slices of how they believe things go, but they're, the Bible's in high regard. And Jesus is in high regard. Not every church would agree with that.
Okay. And this guy says he's a former evangelical Christian. Reflects on the benefits of losing his face. Here we go. Number 9. Friends who are more fun. And the parties are way better. Even simple conversation is more entertaining, honestly. I know this may sound petty, but I'm just telling you what my experience is. When Group A is dominated by a long list of things you're not supposed to say, think, or feel, and Group B doesn't have that list, you can guess which group is going to be more fun to be with. And again, I find it easier now to be friends with a wider range of people. That's it.
Boy, I almost lean with him on that.
Yeah?
Some of the most ludicrous people out there are Christians who have, like, things stuffed up in places that shouldn't be, and they're
That's exactly what I thought was coming.
Yeah. It was just like, really? I can't say that word?
this goes back akin to the first 3 things he had that are a change that he can make and still be a Christ follower, right? Like, the truth is, I find a lot of enjoyment talking to people who are not current followers of Christ because they've lived a slice of life that the Lord is awaiting and ready to bring them from. You know, like, they have really interesting stories and like, I have a ton of friends that don't follow Jesus right now, and like those are conversations that we have, but there's nothing within the constraints of God's words that says don't hang out with those people. Like, you're ignoring Jesus' entire mode of operation.
Well, yeah, and like the setup is a false one, right? Like, if we are dominated by the long list of things that we're not supposed to say, think, or feel, I would agree that sucks, but like, that's not Jesus. That's not introducing someone to Jesus. Like, if what you know about Jesus is this long list of things that you can't do, and that's what I spend my time on in everyday conversation, then I'm not introducing you to Jesus. I'm not living a life that shares Jesus. I'm just trying to give you a set of moral rules. And it's a bit of a non-starter to say Group B doesn't have that list. You can guess which group is going to be more fun to be with, which. Like, if you follow that to its logical end, the anarchist, the guy with no moral boundaries at all, is implicitly more fun than anybody else.
Hey, now, agreed, he's got some cool stories. You know, there's no doubt that I'm sure the anarchist has done some crazy things.
Yeah, I mean, here's the deal. Like, I mean, in that particular example, Group A is the stuck-up Christian. Group B is the free love, free sex guy who's got the herp. And like, I'm just saying. I don't know what implicitly says that guy's more fun to be with because he has no moral constraints. That's not really a Christian issue. Anybody that has some sort of moral limit is going to be the loser in that conversation, and that seems like a false dichotomy.
Here's the thing about the super interesting guy, and I think everybody knows the truth about this dude, right? Like, half of the stories you're like, man, that's an awesome story. I wish I'd have done that. And the other half of his stories are, that's an awesome story. I'm glad it wasn't me. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, half of the story
that's
the guy.
The mark of an interesting guy.
That's exactly. That's what makes the guy interesting. You'd really be excited to do half of what he did, and the other half, you're like, that's nuts. I had nothing to do with that. I'm happy. You know what I'm saying? And so, granted, yes, what you're doing is say, I want to hang around with people that I can take from. You know what I'm saying? That I can use to exploit for their stories. You know what I'm saying? For who they are. I can live vicariously away through that man. And what a convict you are. You know what I'm saying? You're a shyster and you're a con artist and you're basically using people for their experience for your entertainment.
Actually, now that you say that, that is very jerky. It's to say that I don't have to take those kind of risks or put myself in that type of situation, but I do want to know a guy who does that so that I may enjoy his life even though it puts him at risk.
That's right.
Yeah.
I never had
a really huge like college party phase, but Jimmy did. And I hang out with him a lot because he made a lot of stupid decisions.
And let me tell you Jimmy's stories so that you may laugh.
Hey, now to flip the coin a little bit, though, the people that follow Christ do the exact same thing. Everybody knows that one guy that seems to sell all his crap every 3 years and start like Jesus. And then just start walking around, and somehow
that's
the Lord sustained him. And like, that's the first story you tell.
It's like, hey, man, I haven't done anything crazy for God recently, but I know a dude who recently drove 3 states just to give a guy like a sandwich. Like, that's the
yeah,
crazy.
That's right. We're the first guys.
I do that. Yeah,
that's exactly right.
We're latching on vicariously to other Christians and Christ followers and saying, hey, man, they've got a sweet story. I'm going to hang out with them more often, so maybe someday I can have another sweet story to tell
I suppose you run the same risk, though, too, right? Like, the question is, do I tell a story like that, and I'm like, man, I'm working my way there. Like, I see that guy's faith, and there's something genuine about it, and, like, it's an example of what I'm kind of aspired to, as opposed to, frat party John, who I tell that story and I don't want anything to do with it. I just want to share the story and kind of mock him the time he went outside in his undies or whatever.
That's true.
And so, I suppose that's the difference. But the truth is that, like, most of the time, it's not the difference. Most of the time, it is. We tell the story of the guy that rocks for Jesus only because we want to tell the story of the guy that rocks with Jesus to show people that we know the difference, not because we actually aspire to live out our faith in the way that person is.
No, that's true. Like, you hear a guy say, look, I sell all my crap every 3 years, and then we seem to be okay, and you're like, sounds great for you.
Yeah, that guy's crazy.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I love Jesus in the confines of this coffee shop.
Yeah. Your faith is amazing. Mine is also amazing in my living room with all my stiff.
Hey, John the Baptist, enjoy your camel hair. I'm going to sit in my house.
God called me to different things like comfort and a big home.
Yeah, that's what Jesus calls us to be, mildly uncomfortable some of the time.
If you're an American Christian, the Lord has basically called you to be comfortable and have cool stories about people who don't live like you.
Yeah. Hey, man, I recently met someone who went overseas. I didn't, but they did. They're doing the Lord's work.
Basically, number 9 is, I like to be a succubus in all groups.
I live vicariously through others.
Yeah, this is not even a Jesus conversation he's having right here. You know what I'm saying? Like, now granted, the stories that he probably gets from what it sounds like his lame Christian friends. Listen, there's exciting Christian people out there. There's cool, interesting folks out there who love Jesus, right? You chose to hang around with a bunch of lamos. It's not God's fault. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Make some decent friends, for heaven's sakes. I mean, seriously, these are not Bible distinctions. Nowhere in Deuteronomy does it says, find the lamest dude on your block and hang out with that guy.
Thou shalt have lame friends.
Yeah, moralistic Morty, and you decide that Jesus is to blame.
Seriously. Here's the thing. I feel bad for him because, like, if that's what I thought that Christ was offering, I'd be kind of irritated too.
Yeah.
You know, and so, like, I mean, somewhere there's a fault in the system where this guy thought that's the entire gospel of Christ, right? This is the good news that Jesus brought was to make you hang out with lame people, put a bunch of laws in place that you can't attain to, so you feel like a jerk all the time, and then leave you, and then that's it. And like that is there's nothing about the gospel that explains that.
Yeah, and it's weird. Like, the last thing that he said was, and this was a reinforcement, I think, for something he had said earlier. Again, I find it easier now to be friends with a wider range of people. And like, I feel like if you even have a cursory understanding of who Jesus was, and the inclusivity of that man. Now, granted, it is a narrow door, right? But it's open to absolutely everybody.
Right.
Like, it's the least restrictive. Like, it bears no factor as to where you were born, who your parents were, what lineage you are, what country you're from, what language you speak. You know, like, whether you're a good or bad person at the point that you get introduced to Jesus. Like, these things are completely irrelevant. It takes all the distinctions that people make about cliques and groups and says, I don't care. Narrow door. And so when you say things like, I find it easier now to be friends with a wider range of people, I just, like, it just seems to completely misrepresent who Jesus is. But then again, if you're leading with the moral altruism separated from who Jesus is, then your restriction is simply who's willing to agree to act this way for no other reason except for they agree that it's morally good. And, okay, yeah, that seems like a smaller group of folk who's going to hop on board with that. Again, because you could always have John with the herp and, like, he tells cool stories. So why cut yourself off from such a thing?
Yeah. Well, and frankly, if I'm being honest, I'd have to flat out disagree with him, right? Like, without Christ in my life, I'd have no business talking to half the people that I talk to. You know what I'm saying? Like, I get involved in some weird stuff in the name of Jesus. And like, I would have no interest in doing it. I would have no interest in going down there. My heart would have no capacity to handle it or be interested. And, like, I would say the exact opposite of if that was his experience following Christ, I would have to say mine's the exact opposite.
Yeah, we've got, I mean, even through the show, we've gotten involved in some really random things that I have no reason to be involved with at all, just for having done this, and it's Jesus oriented.
Yeah,
I wouldn't do in my own life.
I'm trying to find out where this guy's really coming from, because I'm thinking of, like, what Jesus says in the Bible and what he talks about. Like we've said, his inclusivity and all that good stuff. You know, I'm looking at it from the perspective of, where's discipleship come in if you only hang out with like five Christian people and that's it? You don't hang out with anybody who doesn't believe in Jesus. Where's discipleship? It's like you're sitting in a room going, hey, everybody, still believe in Jesus? Awesome. Did my job. And then moving on.
Let's hit the Arby's.
Yeah. That's a solid point, right? Because, like, if you find yourself stuck with a group that are all acting in this one way, you completely misunderstood the Great Commission, because you're not surrounding yourself by anybody that would otherwise be at least some interesting company if that's your problem.
Go forth and continue disciples of the four people you hang out with on Wednesday.
Here's the deal. I've met an extreme amount of interesting company within the last month for Jesus' purposes. Right. I mean,
Look, look at the 12 dudes that Jesus keeps around him. One of them worked for the government, and one of them, his full-time job was an anti-government man.
Destroy the government all day, every day.
It's like hiring yourself a senator and a protester and saying, we got some work to do, boys. You know what I'm saying?
You guys better get along.
I just don't understand it. Like, that is not the example that Christ gave in both action and word. He just, I don't get it. I'm flabbergasted.
You know what's interesting about that, though? If you look at the way that the disciples are listed, especially when he's getting ready to send them out, like, they're grouped. And the last group is Simon the Zealot and Judas. And you got to figure, like, that's a pretty interesting pairing of guys, right? Like, you got to... I don't know. I kind of like to see what they were talking about on this missionary journey.
Shut up. We're going for Jesus.
Did you bring the nard? You selfish bastard. I'm not sure Judas said bastard. Some ad-libbing on my part.
That was not quoted from Judas.
Bastard's more prominently used in the Apocrypha. Not as often on the Truth Network. 9.3.
Well, that's right. The end of that one.
Dang it.
Nice one. Way to lay that down on us.
You're listening to Live from the Path.
If you still are.
We don't know.
If you still are, yeah, you may have left.
We can be your interesting people. Think about that.
Let us be your cool new friends.
Pray for the show. We can be Group B. That's too bad.
See, and that's what I was going to say, is I'm somewhere in the middle of you guys. Although I like the interesting stories of the people doing crazy stuff, my heart hurts for them.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you know, so it's not enjoyable,
right?
And it's not that funny. You know, I just think it's funny, but then I'm like, oh, man, that's not going to end well for you. And so I'm somewhere in the middle, you know, but I don't like to be with the fuddy-duddy believer who, like, well, don't say the word but, you know.
Yeah,
I've been told that before. I'm like, seriously?
Yeah, I think that just comes with that. Frankly, just comes with age. You know what I'm saying? Like, when I was younger, I would totally live vicariously through another fella. Like, I'm like, that's a crazy story. He's doing all kinds of crazy stuff. I'm like, you should do more crazy stuff. And then now I'm like, you know, I feel like a fool. Like, I feel like I've promoted you into what, you know, into believing that this was a grand thing, and it was selfish on my part, right? Like, I've only encouraged you to do this thing because it sounds awesome, and I don't have to take the risk to do it.
Yeah.
And so, like, yeah, I think I'm heading towards Dan. I don't like it. I don't know. It makes me sad sometimes.
Yeah.
Hey,
yeah,
man, I've egged some people on to do some stupid stuff. I should probably make a couple phone calls and apologize to some people. There's some funny stories that happen, not because of, like, me doing them, But because I totally said, hey, you should go do
that.
Yeah,
you should do that.
Hey, man, you know that awful idea you just said you're thinking about doing? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
you should definitely do that.
I got to work tonight.
Oh, don't worry about that. I represent Jesus. It's not a huge deal.
Fine. I mean, there's nothing explicitly about egging the governor's mansion.
Right.
Come on, Simon.
Do you think you could hit that? Do it.
All right, that's number 9. Hey, well, we got two more. You can look ahead if you want to. Go to time.com, search for What I Gained When I Lost My Religion. Next week, we'll talk about more realistic expectations about life. He lost that. Well, I don't think he's framed this correctly. Or no, what he gained. Sorry. What he gained is more realistic expectations about life. We'll hit that next week. And if you want to hear about our reaction to some of the first 9, you can go to lifeinthepath.org, watch the previous iteration. You know, we'll see where our conversation went.
Oh, man, I'm going to have to hold my tongue because I already want to jump on that. That's
no,
awesome.
No. You're going to have to let it go.
All right.
You're going to have to let it go. All right, Dan, what's trending? What's trending in the news?
Trending in the news. This one's not trending yet, but it will be, I guarantee it, in the next few weeks. This is the whole Merry Christmas thing. And every year it's been popping up lately. Everybody gets all mad if a company doesn't say Merry Christmas, if the advertising doesn't say Merry Christmas, they say Happy Holidays or something. So here's my question. What would Jesus say to the marketing team who decides to take Christ out of Christmas? All right. A, call your stuff what you want. It really has nothing to do with the kingdom I came to establish. B, who do you think you are taking my name out of my holiday? Or C, if you don't remember my name, I won't remember yours when we meet again.
So taking the Christ out of Merry Christmas, so just Merry Mus?
Like Happy Holidays, right. Or have a holiday tree. I mean, even things that are obviously Christmas, here, buy these holiday cards. Like, well, it's the specific holiday is Christmas.
That's not a holiday tree.
Yeah. I can't think of any other holidays that have evergreen trees with lights on it.
Yeah, you know, here's the deal. I'll give my answer in just a second. But, like, in relation, saying happy holidays is the same as saying happy day on someone's birthday. Yeah. There's nothing distinct about this day. I just wanted to bring it to your attention.
It's a great Tuesday.
This day is great with or without you.
Yeah, happy day.
And some people get really upset about it, and then there's this war on
Christmas. I'm a firm number on A. I'm a firm letter A. This has nothing to do with the kingdom I came to set up here. Like, he did not come to carve a place out of our calendar. He came to carve a specific kingdom.
Yeah. You don't think he's on the edge of the throne saying, wait, now Target, they're not using my name.
Moses, we lost Target.
Oh, man.
If only I could have my name on the holiday that otherwise completely perverts everything I meant about the season.
I want people to spend money on stuff in my name.
Maybe if Christmas had anything to do with Jesus anymore, like, maybe there'd be a little bit of, I mean, I can understand where you're coming from, but the fact of the matter is it's trees and presents. Like, that's what it is nowadays. That's what we've commercialized it to be is, hey, it's another day when we get to spend money we don't have on people we love. And
speak for yourself. I'm on the Ramsey.
Happy for you. Nice job. Hey, man, I am too. That's why I'm working to get money.
I'm not really on the Ramsey. That was a jam.
I didn't think so. I'm in that class. You're not there.
Yeah, here's the deal. It is simply not possible for someone to take Christ out of my Christmas. It just isn't. You cannot take that from me. If I want to celebrate Jesus on Christmas or whatever day, you simply do not have the ability to steal it from me, regardless of what you do with yourself. Just like you like, there's nothing you could do that would keep me from loving Jesus or worshiping Jesus or doing whatever it is that I do in service of the kingdom. Yeah. So, like, it's just a false thing. It's like you're trashing a holiday that he didn't establish, that doesn't honor or glorify the things that he's trying to do, and we're fighting people who don't know the difference. As opposed to, like, I mean, I don't want to say it's sad to me, but it is because of how we've diverted it. But the truth is like it's the same way you win anybody else to understanding who Jesus is. You introduce them to Jesus. You don't fight under the moral clause of what you called something. It's just it's the wrong way to the kingdom. It doesn't teach people about Jesus. It just, you got in a freaking pick battle with them about it. And let's say you win. Then what did you do? You got to celebrate your pagan holiday and they still don't love Jesus. Congratulations. We've moved the needle.
And they think you're a little bit odd.
Yeah. Yeah. And now their impression of Jesus is that he's a jerk because he's willing to nitpick over this.
That's right. He wants to take presents out of your kids' hands and ruin joy.
Yeah. You become one of those friends that you have to be careful what you say around.
Yeah.
Like our evangelical friend.
Group A.
Not Catholic.
We're still solid Group B.
I mean, don't hear me wrong. Celebrate Christmas.
Right.
I love it.
Yeah.
It's a great time of year. Like, and I'm not saying ignore it. It's just another day. I mean, there's something about that part of the season. There's nothing bad that comes out of it as far as where your focus is. But as a Christian, like, fight for the right thing. Fight for the movement of the kingdom. Fight for Jesus to be known and through that glorified. Like, don't fight over the calendar. It's stupid. It's stupid.
Yeah. I don't remember the last time I went out to talk to someone about Jesus and to really try and win some over to Christ and win them into the kingdom. And I started off with, hey, let's talk about Christmas. And I don't remember doing that.
You know it's about Jesus,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, you know it's about Jesus, right? Don't worry about him. Let's talk about the day. December 25th, big deal. And I don't remember Jesus going around teaching in the synagogues and going around and talking to all the people that he spoke to in his travels and going, hey, do you know my birthday's coming up?
Hey, everybody,
you know,
wear
that's
red.
A huge deal. Wait a minute. Jerusalem doesn't have trees up and they're not celebrating my birthday? How dare they? Like, Jesus didn't make a big deal out of his birthday.
That's really why Jesus set his face towards Jerusalem. There's no trees. Let's go.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, man.
I wept over the city for the lack of snow to commemorate my faux birthday.
I walked into Jerusalem. I didn't see a single Christmas light. I am angry. No, Jesus didn't make a big deal out of it. Why are you?
I feel like I don't have a choice but to go with A after that diatribe.
I honestly think it is. In the beginning, maybe a few years ago, I was a little more upset than I am now. And I think it's coming to terms with we're a post-Christian society.
Yeah, right.
You know, we're not what we were 20 years ago, right, or what we thought we were 20 years ago. Yeah. We weren't 20 years ago either. But we're just catching up to that, I think.
So. Yeah. Yeah,
that's some of the emotion involved. That's why people get so angry about it. I think they're still stuck with, no, we're a Christian nation. It's like, look around you.
Right. They feel like if this falls, that you lose one of your beacons of Jesus within the United States.
We're losing the battle.
But I mean, here's
have you read Revelation? We're done for anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
Like,
that's
kind of the
end game.
Dan's point, like, and it's not so far-fetched, but like, I would fight for this in my own family. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, sure.
And so, like, if there was a time X number of years ago where we were more communal as a nation, then I would be fighting a little bit harder for that. Like, but I feel like we're not that right now. But, like, I mean, the closer people are to me, the closer I would fight for, you know, not necessarily the day, you know, the specific calendar day, but like, just that I, you know, the reason that my family celebrates it is because that was the day that, you know, that the Savior that brought me out of the life that I was born, and that's a big deal to me. And so, like, I would fight for that within my family. And so I don't know. You know, I don't know what society was like before I was born, but if it was
it was bad.
It was terrible. There was nothing but Hudsons running around. Everybody was on the Ramsey.
but you know, I kind of feel silly. You know, I'm 50 years old now. In high school, I could have looked around and said I was the oddball believer. I mean, there were a bunch of people who went to church, but you could tell by their lives they were not kingdom people. They, you know, they weren't believers, followers. And I kind of figured out back then, hey, you know, we're not really in a Christian nation.
Yeah.
It took me this long to go, no, we really aren't.
You know, I feel like we're not. Young Dan was correct.
Take your holiday.
Wrong about the mustache, correct about Jesus.
All right. What else?
This has hit the news here in the last few days. Brittany Maynard, I think that's how you say her name. She ended her own life. She had a terminal brain cancer. She told everybody she was going to end her own life, and then people kind of thought maybe she wouldn't, but she ended up doing it November 1st. She wrote on her Facebook page, "Goodbye to all my dear friends and family that I love. Today is the day I've chosen to pass away with dignity in the face of my terminal illness, this terrible brain cancer that has taken so much from me, but would have taken so much more. Here's the question." This is obviously much more serious than the last one. When is it okay for a Christ follower to take their own life? We don't know who she was. I'm not going to assume any one way or another. That's not the job here.
Yep.
Just in general. Someone comes to you, okay? When is it okay? Never. Life is a gift from God. It's not ours to take. Let nature take its course. B, basically like her, when you're saving yourself and your family from the most dreadful, painful part of a terminal illness. Or C, I'm glad I'm not God, so I don't have to decide such matters. I give you an out.
He offers an out. Boova, you're up first.
Really?
Yeah.
Really? All right.
I need to decide whether you can handle a child or not. Go ahead.
The answer's no. Man, that's shouldn't be tough, but it is.
I think it's grayer for me than it was 20 years ago.
Yeah, I'm... Okay, so I want my answer to be A, because I do believe that life is sacred, and I do believe that God has the power to do that. And that's where I'm kind of iffy, because I don't know if this is... you know what? I'm going to say A. Here's the deal. It's not yours to take. It wasn't... You didn't create it. You aren't the reason that your life exists. You don't have the right to take that. And I know that I'm probably going to get a little bit of flack for that, but that's honestly where I believe. It's not yours to take. You're stealing it away if you're the one who takes it away.
Boob is a firm A. Mike.
Okay, so the kingdom is divided into many different layers. I am on layer boulder moving, or any type of manual labor is the part of the kingdom of where I generally live.
Uh-huh.
And, like, I don't know. I just flat out don't know. Like, I don't know that I've read a good portion of the Bible throughout my lifetime, and I know how I personally feel, but I don't know where the Lord... I don't know. I just feel like I don't know. I'd like to sit in the A camp, I believe, but I usually like to have biblical precedence for anything that I think would be off of that, and I just don't think I have it. And so, I don't know, I feel like I'm sitting in A.
So the only thing I can think of that falls in that territory is like Saul falling on his sword.
Well, that's the one I thought of.
That's all you got, and you're like, man, I don't know. Honor? I don't know.
I mean, if you, and of course, it's not biblical literature, right? But like, any of the apostles could have bailed, knowing that they were either going to be A, boiled alive, B, hung upside down on a cross, C, tortured, D, you know, stoned. And I mean, did Stephen put himself in that situation? You know, I don't. I mean, it depends. Like, you go more than one move back, apart from you know, putting the sword in. You know, did you put yourself in a situation where you will most likely die?
Right, like maybe you didn't take the pills, but you decided 20 years before that to overdo it on break cakes on a daily basis and had a heart attack.
Yeah.
Does that count?
Emphysema is a proven, you know, cancer causer. You know, I've smoked for a number of years. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Am I a party to it? Have I started my own problem? You know, the same guy that goes into battle and they're outnumbered, you know, 1,000 to 20 and says, we're going in because it's the right thing to do. You know, have you made a choice that's pretty much decided that you're gonna end your own life? You know, I don't know.
The guy who jumps on a grenade to save four others.
Yeah, Samson is
greater love has no one than gives
the
up
the guy that
for
died on a cross for everybody else.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So
it's different than the typical what we're talking about, though.
Yeah, definitely.
I don't know. I'm sitting in A.
Yeah. I'm an A.
I would definitely always tell people A. I mean, you know, if someone was considering it, I would be like, no, you don't.
Yeah.
That's not yours to take.
Yeah.
After the fact, I don't know. There's things we just don't know.
Yeah.
What some of the modern medications do that to actually make you think differently than a, you know, you really would. And that, I think that confuses the issue for me.
All
these medications, the side effects are suicide. You know, you hear them on TV every day, you know.
Yeah.
You're like, well, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, where people's minds are at are interesting, right? Like, it's we like to approach circumstances as if everybody approaches them in the right mind.
Yeah,
I would say that the basic thought process, like, would otherwise reveal to me some level of dishealth, or at least not seeing the world in the way that I would say is healthy, regardless of how rational within those terms it sounds like.
Yeah.
And here's the deal. There's room on a social perspective to just flat out disagree on worldview. But my perspective would be is that we don't understand our identity clearly. We're not seeing it clearly for that thought process to exist. And so, you know, from that perspective, it's a strong A. Do I think that being mistaken in this area is the unforgivable sin? No, I don't think that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, but yeah, if you had to come down to it and say, you know, what is this? How are we to think about this? I think Boov has nailed it. It just that's a difficult thing because really what you're fighting for is some level of control. But I'm fighting to give that away within my own life and what my life is used for. I don't know why I would want to wrench it back in the terms of death.
I think generally it's just a very dark moment in that person's life. If they could have waited an hour or 3 hours or overnight and the next day you thought it through, they'd be in a different, totally different place.
Yeah, but that is not the case for the gal that we're talking about from Oregon.
That's different. Yeah, this is a whole different thing. She was a conscious decision of, yeah.
That's where I'm looking at the differences. I've seen it before where it seems like it's not a normal thought process for someone to be in.
Yeah.
And I've been a party to that situation of the whole, they're not in their right mind. They're not in their right thoughts and things like that. And this is something that I've battled with for years, years going back and forth on, you know, am I angry at God? Am I accepting God? You know, is this something that I'm angry at that person, or am I accepting of that and things like that? And it's a difficult situation to be involved in. I stand by my answer of A, but I will tell you, this is one of the things that I'm very excited that we have such an amazing God on, because we have a just God that ultimately is our judge. It's not us. It's him who's going to judge us in the end. And I'm very thankful for that, because if I were to come down to having to be the judge of every one of these situations, I would not be the right party. I would not be the right person. And I'm glad that God is the best way to put it for me.
Yeah,
definitely.
All right.
Last one is Alex from Target. This is just 2 days old. Sunday afternoon, a Twitter user posted a picture of just this random teenager who was an employee at Target named Alex. Within hours, the photo went viral. Everybody just got all excited about him, thought he looked gorgeous and everything. And he added personally thousands of viewers on Twitter. He got on a few hours later. He's like, oh, I guess I'm famous. Target's even responded to the thing. Like, he had no idea what's going on. It's just this guy named Alex. So here's the question. As he's struggling with his newfound fame, if Alex came to you for help, how would you encourage him to respond to his newfound fame? A, tell him to cash in and try to become Target's new spokesman. B, tell him to take this opportunity to ask out the hottest girl in school. Or C, tell him fame, is fleeting and genuinely means nothing. Seek God in your youth.
This is the guy?
That's the guy.
He's like 14, man.
Yeah, he's a teenager.
This isn't even a good picture.
Yeah, the picture does. Like, I kind of thought he'd be kind of hanging out in the...
Right. I figured there'd be some kind of pose going on.
He's just working.
He's legitimately just leaning over a cash register.
He was doing the, you know, putting...
Shirt's
kind of
tight,
whatever.
I mean, that's not a normal fitting shirt.
Hold on.
I think you got a size too small.
People have made up, like, fake ads and put him in their Christmas ad. I mean, there's, like, all kinds of stuff. It's gone viral.
We need to try this.
People are funny.
It's awesome.
Let's take a random picture of Mike and post it on the internet and see if we can get him to
That's
be
it. They've tried
super
other things.
Famous.
Here's, you know, John from Starbucks, whatever. You know, they've had different ones. They've tried to do it since then.
He's Alex.
I just don't.
I don't get it.
He's dumbfounded. He's just working. And all of a sudden, the whole country is talking about him.
Well, yeah, if I got on my Facebook today and then I have 100,000 friends, I'd probably wonder what was going on.
Every time how hot you are, you're like, well, yeah.
Okay, so the question is, what advice do you give him?
Yeah, but I mean, if you're a teenager, that's kind of hard to handle. Suddenly the whole world is talking. We're talking about him here in Johnston, Iowa, radio studio.
I feel like C is pretty solid, but I might give him an A also.
Shoot, I missed the – I was looking up the picture.
Tell him to cash in, become Target's new spokesman.
Okay.
Get some bank.
Yep.
B, tell him that, hey, this is a great opportunity. Ask out the hottest girl in school. Or C, tell him the famous pleading, you know, kind of balance him and seek God.
All right.
All of the above.
Yeah, C, absolutely. B, all right. A,
yeah. Yeah, I think I'd do it all too.
All of the above, dude. Jump
hey,
in,
man.
Buddy.
You shouldn't need fame to ask out the hottest girl in school. Just do it.
But keep the foundation of the God part when you're asking her out. Remember your motives are to, like, take her to a Bible study or something.
Yeah. See God first and foremost. The rest, yeah. Why not?
Mike, are you in for all of the above?
I don't know, man. I'd ask him to leave.
You'd ask him to leave?
Yeah,
Alex
I don't.
Shows up at your house. Hey, man, Mr. Foost, I've recently become incredibly famous, and I need some advice on what I'm supposed to do. You go.
You punch him in the face and say, how's that for hot?
I feel like you should have started work.
I feel like you should leave.
You
should have
been at
say.
Work 2 hours ago, Alex. Get out of here. You know what I'm saying? Go back
to
the Target.
We can't assume that he skipped work to come and talk to you.
Well, that's the only times I'm available when Target's open.
Hey, man, you're right, 346,000 followers on the official Alex from Target Twitter account. I think we have like 40.
Hey, man, seriously, let's take a picture out of Target.
Somebody posted something like, dress like Alex, you know, and it was like, you know, Target khaki.
Now, see, it'd be different if he came up to me and said, hey, there's four creepos from Iowa that are recreating my poses in an attempt to be famous. What do I do?
Hey, man, you're one of the four creepos.
I would
be good
first
for advice.
Of all, I would abstain, and then I would suggest Alex gets an injunction against you. Yeah, I don't know, man. I suppose all three. Just play it by ear. You don't have to start acting like a raving fool. You know, just be who you are. It's what got you to where you're at.
Actually, here's the deal. It's like I found myself giving that advice over and over and over again. Like people are going about their normal business, and what it is starts producing some sort of fruit or other, and the conversations keep coming up about, okay, what am I going to do? Whether it be at a work situation, the Jesus situation, whatever. They're like, you know, okay, now what do I do? I said, well, what were you doing to create this positive atmosphere? Well, this, and this. Well, then keep doing that. Well, what if such and such happens? Or what if so-and-so comes in? Or what if this person wants to talk to me? I say, well, talk to them then. You know, like whatever it is that you do, do that. Yeah. And if that starts to grow bigger and bigger, like the wrong reaction is to say, okay, now what do I do differently? Like whatever you did is what brought you to the things that are now happening.
No, it's true.
Keep doing that.
Look at some of the people that do something very fruitful for a long time and then end up in ruination. Right? It's when they stop doing what's Jesus' advice to the Laodiceans? Do what you did before.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? Go do that stuff that you were doing in the beginning, right? That's what got you to where you were. It's what put you in a place that you could be useful. And like all of a sudden you're like, I got to change my ways. It's bigger now, or there's consequences now, or whatever. It's like, just do what you were doing before.
Yeah, like for some reason people have this impression that like what works in a microcosm like suddenly blows up from a macro circumstance. And here's the deal. Like there's things where that's true, right? Yeah, if I make dinner at home for my family and then agree to be the lunch lady at a school, like that's there's difference. There's a difference in feeding that many people, right? But if we're talking about that, how you impact people with your work ethic or with your character or with your example as someone who follows Christ, like it simply doesn't change. It doesn't change regardless of who you're sitting in front of. This conversation, one of the conversations come up at work, and they were talking about like some meeting we were going to be on, and like this person that's, you know, seven steps up in the company, and like, hey, this so-and-so is going to be on the phone. How are you going to handle yourself? I said, how I always handle myself. And they said, oh. I said, hey, man, you know that's coming. If you don't want me on a phone call, that's fair. I said, but just so you know, like, that's how I act. I'm not really all that concerned with whoever else is on the phone.
You know, it's funny, but, like, that type of mindset takes people aback.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I just had a conversation today. There's a manager that is four or five steps above me. And I sent him an email months ago challenging him to arm wrestling. Uh-huh. I challenged him to arm wrestle. And they were flabbergasted. I'm like, I've challenged everyone to arm wrestling. Why is this man any different? We met. We shook hands. I asked him where the more free soda is. And then I sent him an email 2 days later, asked him if he wanted to arm wrestle. Uh-huh. Like, and why? Because that's just what I do. I do it to guys that whatever, sweep the floor, and I do it to the guy that runs the company.
Yeah.
I feel like I act the exact same way across to everybody. And people are like, well, you can't do that. He's so-and-so.
Well, yeah, he craps on the golden toilet seat.
Yeah, I mean, seriously, what's the difference? Can the man arm wrestle or can he? And how big of a man is he? These are the things I need to know, you know? And so, like, that is the truth of the matter. Like, any success that you found, if you think that it's going to change you when you attain it, then you're shooting for the wrong goal. Your goal should continue to be who you are and allow that to either excel on its own.
And here's the deal. Like, if you feel like something has to dramatically change for you to deal with whoever this person is or whoever this circumstance is, then you should change how you're living right now. You're giving everyone else the short shrift.
Yeah, it's true.
Don't act like a jerk and have a poor work ethic because of everyone who else is around you waiting for the time in which you get some kind of big exposure. Like, it isn't the thought process that like, it's not wise to think, how would I act if under this microscope or talking to this person who's important or whatever the circumstance is? It is, take whatever that is and bring it down to your everyday level and act like that. Why don't you be a courtesy and a friend to other people and act like, give people your everything instead of waiting to get in front of the right people?
Yeah.
Like, that's weird. Anyway, all right, all of the above.
Yeah. C.
You got to live your life.
A.
You got to live your life. All right. Is that all of them?
That's it.
That's what's trending in the world. Trending with Dan. Sorry, no one else did it. No one else jumped in.
I didn't know what was going to happen.
Yeah, I didn't even know that was going on.
Okay. Dan. All right, here's the solution. Here's the solution. See if you can guess what the problem is.
Booba.
All right, the solution is, If you want to dig in deeper, sometimes you have to jump in the hole. If you want to dig in deeper, sometimes you actually have to jump in the hole. That's the solution. What's the problem? There's multiple answers to this, fellas. This is not a brain buster.
It depends on what angle you're coming from.
If you have to dig in deeper, sometimes you have to jump in the hole.
Yeah, if you want to dig deeper, sometimes you have to jump. You actually have to jump in the hole.
And you want me to explain why that's good advice?
No. I want you to try to brainstorm what problem might exist, or which that would be a good solution.
That's all. That's a lot of problems.
You have moles in the front yard.
I know. Throw them out.
Moles.
Dan says moles.
He literally dances moles.
Someone's having difficulty with the depth of their faith.
Okay, explain that. What do you mean?
So someone's like, feeling
so
like,
how would that solve that problem?
So someone feels like their faith is just kind of stagnant, right? They're just not getting any kind of movement. They want to dig in deep, but they don't know what the next step is. What I take by jumping into the hole is actually getting in to the nitty gritty and getting ready to like do the hard work.
Okay.
If you're wanting to dig deeper, you need to jump into the hole, meaning there's a little bit of faith you have to jump into and then really start digging in deeper, get putting in more work. So there you go.
Okay.
I'd say that's true for helping people.
Explain further.
It's very easy to say, that you're going to help people, but until you've availed yourself to be that is exactly what you're doing, and now you've cornered yourself into only doing that, and told others that's what you're available for, then you're forced to go deeper.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
It'd be true in relationships as well. You can have a very surfacey relationship. If you want to get deeper with a person, you've got to jump in and
actually have to
have
jump
the
in.
Conversation, have spend time with them.
Not just awkwardly stare at them from across the coffee shop.
Exactly. Hey, you.
Send them an IM on Facebook
latte?
And go, hey, I think you're pretty.
Pretty cool.
Pretty cool. I'm a jerk.
Okay. So, yeah, those were good answers. Those were good answers. So here's where that piece of that solution came from. And it had to do with understanding your Bible. And what I've noticed in some interactions over the past weeks, months, is I think sometimes where we struggle with understanding our Bible is when we try to dig in deeper to understand what's going on in there and what the scriptures are telling us. A lot of the time, our reaction to deep Bible study is to jump back up onto the surface and latch onto whatever it is that we already know. Here's some deep information. What is this telling you? The basic thing that I already knew. Like if you're reading through Romans, 1-9, You've read through Romans 2:9, and you say, like, what did you get out of that? And you say, well, we were bought with a price. Well, here's the deal. Yes, you were bought with a price, but that is not what Romans 1-9 is after. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's pointing you to something else. And I've noticed, like, people that have been in the faith for years, and I think have a loving heart, and they're really searching the scripture. But what we tend to do is we read these details and we read these stories, and then our reaction tends to be a very shallow reaction. Like, we go to the meat market to buy meat, and then we jump back out for a drink of milk, and then jump back in, and we never actually eat the meat. And so sometimes to be able to, dig deeper, to really get in and understand what we're talking about, you can't just dig the hole from standing on the surface. You actually have to jump in the hole and be in there and keep working at it with your shovel. And I promise you that these are things that are understandable. But it has come up so many times over a relatively short amount of time recently that I thought, we're just sometimes we just miss it. And that the truths that we're holding on to are not wrong truths. But if we are missing some things, if we go to study scripture and every answer to everything we study is, yes, because God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son. That's the truth. But that's not what they're arguing for at all. Like, there's nothing to do with
more than the bullet
about.
Points. I mean,
exactly.
There's so much more. And
exactly. And I think, I've seen people like trying to digest the Bible, and they'll do that. And the problem in a Christian community is it's hard to rebuke such a thing. Here, I Romans 1-9, yes. My reaction, we were bought with the price. And like, you know what everybody does? Yes, we were bought with the price. Yes.
Amen.
And you know what? That terrible representation of what's been going on in Romans 1-9 has just stood because he said something that everyone agrees with because it's true, right? But that's not what that part of was talking about, and we missed some of the depth. It's a tough thing to talk about because the truth is, again, you're fighting for a bullet point truth that I think we would all agree with. But sometimes like we're missing the meat. A lot of times because we're jumping back up to take a drink of milk, a good, solid, healthy drink of milk. But you got to hang in there and cut the meat and deal with it.
And that will otherwise produce the types of things that you're looking for. But we got to make – don't just lean on your bullet points. It's we're missing some of what God specifically has provided, right? Not just fancy guys, not just pastors, not just like guys that lead your Bible study, but like what God has provided to understand his character, his people, his kingdom more. We have an opportunity to miss that if we keep jumping out to take that drink of milk. So
people are intimidated because they don't really know how to jump in the hole. They want
yes.
to.
Yeah.
Like, what resources can you trust?
Yes.
You know, and
heck, I struggle with that.
Yeah. It's because you have more and more bad theology being written.
Yep.
And with the internet, you know, you can find anything.
Yep.
You know, so that's what I think intimidates people, is they want to be careful and they want to know, they want to make sure they're doing it properly.
Agreed.
And so they just need to learn the basic, like the series we did recently of asking the context and going into looking at, you know, who, what, when, where, why, and that kind of thing.
Here's the thing, though. It's very funny the way that people read their Bible, though, and this is me included, but like they will read their Bible different than they read any other book.
Yeah.
And they will take in the information different than they will take in information from any other source. Like, you know, for example, if I'm sitting down watching a TV show and a guy comes in off the street on the show and everybody's mad at him, I'm like, where'd this guy come from? Why has everybody got mad at this guy? Like,
yeah,
I don't
right.
get it. The same thing happens in the Bible. I'm like, yeah, everybody's mad at that dude. And then I move on. Like, yeah, a guy came in. They seem to be kind of upset. There's obviously no context or any reason or why they should be mad at the guy. I don't care. Right? Let's move on. Where's the pearls? Give me the pearls. I don't want to hear this stuff.
Yeah.
Right? But like any other form of media, my mind would be exploding with questions like, why is everyone so mad at this guy? Why does this guy not know anything? Why are there people spitting at this man? Why does no one like the Samaritans?
Yeah.
Right? But like normal Bible reading, I would go, well, that's odd that he sat down with a woman at the well. Where did everybody else split to?
Yeah.
Why is she not getting water like everybody else at the regular time? You know, like, I don't care. I don't care at all.
Yeah.
It's just like Jesus is talking to a lady and says something insightful and seems to know her life. Creepy. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. So I mean, I guess that the broad reaction is if you want to dig the hole, if you want to dig deeper, sometimes you have to actually jump in the hole. Cling to those solid truths. I love it. But, like, that is the context, the perspective of which you can understand the rest of the Bible and what it points to. But it doesn't excuse not being able to kind of dig into those things. So be confident the Holy Spirit can guide that. You know, sniff out your sources, but jump in. Jump into that hole. Keep digging. Hey, if you're listening on the Truth Network 99.3, we got to let you go. If you're on the podcast, we'll be right back with you. You've been listening to Hey, big thanks to Bob Eisenhower with the Eisenhower team, Bob and John, for all your home buying and selling needs, and Westfield Veterinary Hospital. It's westfieldvethospital.com. This is the time. It's starting to get cold out there. Make sure you set yourself up a good place for your pets to stay warm to the winter, preferably in a house, and get them caught up with all their various sundry health items. Westfield Vet Hospital can help. Thanks for listening to Life from the Path. Justice. Yeah, that's it.
That's great.
You're not getting a full view of it.
Hey, man, listen, if you want to nerd out at your own place, that's fine.
Yeah, I was going to say, man, don't grab that stuff here.
Hey, I transported that to my Dropbox today so that I could put it on the screen. I was going to put the Live from the Path Man on it.
So I was thinking about what you said, Mike, just before we went to break. And I think I watch a lot of how-to videos. Like if I'm going to change the ice maker in my freezer or something, I'm like, I have no idea what I'm doing. So I'll YouTube it, you know, and they'll say, take the Flinger and do this. And whenever I watch these videos, I pause it a lot. I'll think about it. I got to look up terms. Like, I don't even know what that word means, you know, like what a part, you know, is called. And with the Bible, you'll read through it. And if you don't know, you just skip it.
Yeah, that's true.
You say, whatever. Like you said, like, oh, he's with the woman. Yeah, okay, whatever. And you just keep going because your goal is just because say you want to be able to say you read it.
Yeah.
Rather than get it.
That's exactly, like, I don't know. Like, it's funny, but that's been coming up a lot more lately. Like, I start asking questions like, why did that guy react that way?
Yeah.
Why has he come by himself? You know, like, things aren't right. Things that would normally set me up, you know, that would be odd. You get a guy showing up at your house at 11 o'clock at night, knocking on the door. Before you open the door, there's like 50 questions that go through your head like, where's his car? Why is he here by himself?
Yeah.
It's really late at night. why does he not have his hair cut in the last 8 months? It's like, everything's not adding up here.
Yeah.
But in the Bible, we're like, sounds great. You know what I'm saying? Shepherds.
It is the word of God, therefore, you know, it's like, how about there was a reason he wrote this?
Yeah.
Or said this?
Yeah. Hey, look, we're going to murder all the kids under two. Well, that happened. That happens today. You're like, what? Why? What is going on? That place is terrible. But you read it in the Bible, you're like, yep, that went down. Had to be.
Yeah. You know, and even it, some of it even comes with, I was talking to someone about this recently, with intent. Like, if you look at the way that some of these guys represented the gospel, and like, we have the benefit to go back and we can say, hey, you know, so-and-so, you know, John talked about this or Matthew talked about this. But here's Luke and Mark gave different information. And sometimes you think, well, you know, luckily we're here to fill in the gaps. But, like, they included what details they wanted to include, right? So the question is like, what am I supposed to learn by what they provided? I mean, not that there isn't something you can understand about the full view, but, like, these guys weren't dumb.
Yeah,
like, they could have written a bunch of different stuff, but there's certain information they provide. Let's try to understand what they're saying by the details they provided. But sometimes, like, it's like reading a Cliff Notes version alongside what we're reading, and we actually miss some of the voice of what they're after, and some of the distinct views that we get from each of these gospel writers, because we're reading from such a holistic perspective. We're coming back and looking in, as opposed to taking in how someone took it. And you gotta let those guys breathe a little bit. You know, recognize that the Holy Spirit inspired it. He didn't say, "Boy, I'm also better inspire Mark because, shoot, Matthew's going to leave this stuff out."
Yeah.
You know, like there was an intent behind some of those things. So, all right, anyway, something to think about. Scripture. Do it.
Okay, so there's a guy that took a quiz of first-time church attenders, and he took a poll of them because they were all decided they weren't going to go back to church. And so he took down the top 10 reasons in order of how often they appeared, and we're going to run through them real quick and see if we think these are legitimate problems that people are running into.
Okay.
Wait, legitimate as in a good reason, or it's really the reason?
It's the reason they gave.
Yeah, yeah.
So it is their perspective.
It's like real reasons, but you want to slap them because it's a stupid reason probably.
Maybe. We'll see. Some of them are probably legit. Some are probably going to expose the church for being silly, instituted things that are probably unnecessary and weird. The other things are like, look, they probably weren't seeking Christ in the first place. You know, they bailed because they're fighting with God, not us. So here we go. It says, just as a preface, the guy says, though my poll is not scientific, it is nevertheless fascinating. Here are the top 10 in order of frequency. Number one, they would not be attending back to church. One, having a stand up and greet one another time in the worship service. This response was my greatest surprise for two reasons. First, I was surprised how much guests are really uncomfortable during this time.
What?
And second, I was really surprised that it was the most frequent response.
I've read that twice now recently.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not surprised by that. I'm in the church and sometimes it's awkward.
It's real awkward.
We stopped doing it a long time ago, though.
Oh, man. I mean, seriously. I mean, like, when I was a kid at my grandpa's church, I used to see if I could make it all the way around to service before Organ Man got done with Just As I Am. You know what I'm saying? He'd fire it up, and me and Ben would go bowling around this church, you know, running, talking to old people. Hey, how you doing? You know what I'm saying? See if we could shake everybody's hand by the time we got there.
Yeah.
And, like, this is the most phony version of trying to make a buddy or a friend or I really care about you ever.
This is fellowship.
So then, you know, here I am 25 years later, you know, and you got me doing the same job. You know what I'm saying? Like, hey, buddy, how's life? Oh, the worship's starting. I'll see you later. You know what I'm saying? Like, if I knew anything about you, I'd have talked to you already when I came in.
Yeah, it's tantamount to a commercial break.
Yeah, yeah.
It's what it is.
Sorry about the cancer. Gotta go.
The funny part was, is I read
by the worship music.
I read some of the follow-up comments, and there are people just, I mean, vehemently upset that the people are downplaying this meet. They're like, people love our new meet and greet. It makes them feel welcome.
No, they don't.
No, it doesn't. It makes them feel awkward. Name one other institution where there's a mandatory meet and greet.
Can you imagine that? In a hospital waiting room?
Yeah.
Like, everybody's sitting in the hospital waiting room before the doctor, and then everyone's, for 5 minutes, I want everyone to stand up and say hello to each other.
Weep, greeting time.
Yeah, what are you in for?
What's your name? Why are you here? Oh, gross, I touched your hand. Bye.
Gunshot wound.
I got the hurt, but I got good stories.
So I've been thinking after reading this stuff that we ought to even, we moved our thing to the end, we just put a little slide-ups, hey, hang out for 5 minutes. I'm wondering if we shouldn't, like, dump that, too.
Well, here's the deal. Yeah. People
is that awkward? I mean.
It's kind of awkward, but, like, people bail on it on their own.
Yeah.
Because
you
don't have them sandwiched in the middle of service. If you're like, hey, here's the last 5 minutes, shake hands if you want, people just leave, you know, because that's what they want to do.
Yeah. So, yeah, and that's the right reaction, right, is figure out, you have to change their want-tos. You have to change the reaction to say, I'm getting out of here. I don't care if there's other people here.
You know, like that's the root of the problem. We can you can try to mask it all you want to and paint it up and say we have a greeting time or we do the 5 minutes or like whatever it is. But like if you're holding your people hostage to create community, I feel like we're not creating community correctly.
Yeah,
bummer.
Yeah.
Like it's, they do that.
Intended it well.
They do that in prisons at the yeah. yard time.
It's just like when you used to get in a fight with your sibling when you were little, and your mom's like, "Say you're sorry and give her a hug." You're like, "I don't want to do that." It's like we are not in the loving mood right now, but you have to do it to get out of trouble. That's what's going on here.
I do want to be in community. How are you?
All right. Reason number two: unfriendly church members. This response was anticipated, but the surprise was the number of respondents who included non-genuine friendliness in their answers. In other words, the guests perceived some of the church members were faking it. Yeah, that's really annoying too. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. If you don't love people, get off the greeting committee. In fact, get rid of the greeting committee. Put a guy by the information desk. Here's the deal. Like I saw, I'm not a friendly man. Right? That's across the board true. I'm not known to being friendly.
What?
Yeah. I don't know. Striking, isn't it? But like, I saw a dude at church this Sunday. I'd never seen him before. And like, for some reason, I felt like I was going to go talk to him, right? Now, I'm not going to say that's divine intervention, but I don't go volunteer to talk to anybody unless they're selling me a 99-cent roller dog and a soda. You know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
And so, like, I thought I'll go talk to him. So it seems to me that the Lord is handling his business. I talked to the one guy the Lord wanted me to talk to, and whatever, he seems to got it covered. Now, I'm not saying that you can have a bunch of stone walls standing at the front door barking orders around, but, like, don't set up a phony greeting ministry. Like, hey, how you doing? How many kids you got? Like, unless you really care about them, don't ask them those questions.
And again, like, that's the distinction, right? Like, you do it wrong if you put people that don't care or people that are serving a function as opposed to, like, actually enjoy talking to people.
Yeah.
That's the difference.
You know how you can tell instantly if they're in it for you or for them? I've had it happen to me many times, you know, traveling, vacation, whatever. They say, hey, how you doing? Really glad you're here. Yeah, I'm from Georgia. Oh. You know, like, I don't live here. I'm just
That's
traveling.
Right.
It's like, oh, you're not going to – you're not a target for
us. Are you still going to tithe?
I don't even care if you're here now. I mean, immediately, the whole continent, everything changed. You're just like, whoa, sorry.
No, you're not a new member of our cult.
So I stopped telling people that. I'd say, oh, yeah, I'm doing great.
Okay. Number three, unsafe and unclean children's area. This response was generated the greatest emotional reactions. If your church does not give a high priority to children, don't expect young families to attend.
Yeah, true. That's very true.
It's pretty obvious for everything, right? Like, if you can't keep your place cleaned up and free of danger, I would not expect people to return. That's true of more than church. Yeah, also true of gas stations and hospitals.
That's what I'm saying. Like, the same reason you don't frequent anywhere else with your kids, you're like, that place looks creepy. The bars on the window say, let's go elsewhere.
Welcome to the grocery store. By the way, there's booby traps.
Hey, man, I didn't pay the hobo stab insurance premium. We probably shouldn't go to that one.
Yep.
Number four, no place to get information. If your church does not have a clear and obvious place to get information, you probably have lowered the chances of a return visit by half. There should also be someone to greet and assist guests at the information center as well. Now, I think there's an idea in people's head what an information center looks like. I think you probably do want to greet you want to address people into a certain flow of where they are put in a position where they can ask where they need to go. There's someone available. This does not mean like a kiosk of pamphlets and overwhelm them with every organization that you have right when they walk in the door. You know, but it does mean having someone available to answer a question. In fact, the most frustrating thing I've ever heard was, I have no idea where to take my kids.
Yeah.
Like, that drives people absolutely nuts. And so, like, if people can walk into your place and they feel like they're already lost in a sea of dark oak doors that have been there since the 70s and have no idea where the kids are, that's a mistake. And the same is true if you call your kids' ministry, like, Junior Jesuses or something, you know, like, that don't mean anything to a guest. They don't know what age group that is or what even that does.
Does my Johnny apply for the Junior Jesus program?
Yeah. I mean, is he a preteen Peter? I don't know where the kid goes.
Preteen Peter.
Here's the thing. It's catchy. It's funny. You know, stop it. You know what I'm saying? Like, put the ages of the kids on the door. Yeah. Tell them where the kids are going. You know what I'm saying? Like, you can be kitschy and fun in the lesson if you want to be. But, like, me as a dad, I want to know who's taking my kids, where they're going to be when I get out of church, and what you plan on doing with them. If I'm visiting a church, that's what I care about. I want to know where they're going and who's watching them. That's what I want to know.
I'm going to do everything I can to get the preteen Peters. made to be a group. The Junior Jesuses and the Juvenile Jameses.
Here we go. Number five, bad church website. Most of the church guests went to the church website before they attend a worship service. Even if they attend the service after visiting a bad website, they attend with a prejudicial perspective. The two indispensable items guests want on a website are address and times of service. It's just that basic. That's true. Yeah. I mean, seriously.
Actually, I'm a pretty harsh judge of website. Not so much like if your website is if it looks like if it's poorly designed, like that really bothers me. I don't care how much is on it, actually. If it's clean, if it's a clean design, if it looks like someone has touched it within the last, you know, 2 months, I'm generally all right with it. But like if it's like a real junk design, then I think I don't trust your.
Do you like it when the organ music pops on when you get to the page? Singing just
that's
as I am.
That's a definite no.
Yeah.
The flashing no. Link for online giving.
Actually, here's other things that turn me off. Like, I've looked at a number of church websites. A picture of the building. Now, here's the deal. I get that, so like you can recognize it. But I look at it, I'm like, what is this? This has anything to do with me at all. Yeah. I don't care about the building.
Nothing alive about that.
I actually don't like that. I don't like it when, this is probably just me, right? But like, when preachers put doctorate indications after their name and a long theological description of where they went to school and crap, I'm like, man, I can really care less about that. In fact, I feel like you're hard to get along with. Like, it's probably not true, right? But I looked at a church website here in the last couple days. There was a church that I saw, and I went to go check out their website and see what they were about because I was going to go talk to them about helping us out with some stuff. And, like, their church was so cluttered with PhDs and, like, ministry titles. I'm like, what are you about and who do I call? That's all I want to know. I just want to call a guy and say, hey, I had this idea. We thought the body of Christ could get together and do some stuff. And so far, I feel like you're gonna put your nose at me because I don't have a PhD. Yeah.
What are you, a tent maker?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, what are you? What, a Paul? Paul. He said to die is gain. Get out of here. So anyway, yeah, I find
that. He said to die is gain. Now go and do like this. That's rough times.
That's, oh, well.
Number six, poor signage. If you have been attending a church for a few weeks, you forget all about the signage. You don't need it anymore, but guests do, and they are frustrated when it's not there. That's true. That's just foolish. People want to know how to get places.
Yep.
Insider church language. This one's actually very true. Most of the respondents were not referring to theological language as much as the language that the only the members know. Yep. My favorite example was the WMU will meet in the GLC in the room where the GAs usually meet.
Tell you what.
That's awesome.
I did a sermon like years ago, very beginning of the church. It was a personality thing, square, circle, you know, like.
One of your best.
That's what people say.
Everybody loves it.
I know. But afterwards, people are like, oh, man, you're such a square. I'm like, guys, no one knows what that means unless they were there that day.
Yeah, right.
But I never, people still talk about that who were there. And I'm like, no one knows what you're talking about. So at one point, they started making CDs of that one to give out to people so they'd know the language. Like, how about if you just. Don't use the language. Yeah. Which was a sermon.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? We have a hard enough time getting past the words like grace and sanctification and using the phrase Holy
You're
Spirit.
You're such a squiggly.
People like, knowing what you mean. You know what I'm saying? And then and then you start bringing a bunch of weird lingo in, and the people just get lost. They don't like that.
I'm just imagining the greeting team with like a paper that says, "Welcome to church, and here are all of our abbreviations and acronyms. You hear anything
this
like this?
Communicate.
This is what this means, and don't feel afraid to come and talk to us if you have no idea what's going on in the sermon."
I know this is confusing, but the Holy Spirit can handle it. Go ahead.
Now, I've gone back and forth personally on, like, what do you do with some of the theological terms? For a long time, I kind of avoided some of them, but then I started thinking, well, they're like biblical, though.
Yeah, right,
like,
yeah.
Redemption. It's like, well, it's a good idea to know what that is.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And justification and stuff. And it's like, and I may not use it without explaining it, but it's good to use them.
Well, and I think you and I may have talked about this, some of this stuff before. It's like, sometimes you got to fight for those terms. You got to fight for them because people do weird stuff with them, and
you
got to
keep Christ in Christmas.
And the truth of the matter is like, and sometimes that's hard from your guys' perspective because I feel like you probably do more Bible study than most of the congregants at your place, right? But like, I've not known what evangelicals meant forever, and very much with my Bible reading, I will just skip over it and let you keep on blabbering away. And so, like, it's hard to look at it from your perspective to read, you know, a chapter that you're going to teach about and think there's a 85% possibility they have no idea what that means or what, like, and you would probably be stopping three times as much as you stop now to explain something.
Yeah.
Like, we'll just give in and say, like, that sounds like a preacher word that you guys are cool with knowing. I get the gist. And really, the gist is kind of wrapped up in that word. That's why I used it. You know, and so, like, I think there's a lot more of that than is commonly thought.
Yep.
Number eight, boring or bad service. My surprise was not the presence of this item. The surprise was that it was not ranked higher. Most people don't care if your service is crappy. They're more irritated that they can't find where to put their kids.
They say people will decide long before they get to the service if they're coming back. And it's most of that stuff that's been mentioned.
Yeah, I think that's true.
You guys should stop putting me up by the front.
Yeah. Number nine, members telling guests that they were in their seat or pew.
Oh.
Yes. What? This obviously still takes place in some churches.
Sorry, what? That is outrageous. No wonder Jesus weeps.
If I ever catch anybody doing that, I'm going to ask them to leave for the Sunday. Say, listen.
Hey, man, that's my church seat.
Number 10, last one, dirty facilities. Some of the comments, didn't look like it has been cleaned in a week. No trash cans anywhere. Restrooms were worse than a bad truck stop.
Boy, that's pretty stiff, man.
Hey, man, gross.
Even a good truck stop is iffy. Huh. All right. No, all those seem, I mean, they ring true. I mean, here's the deal, is that, like, ultimately, if you're asking someone the possibility of joining your community, are you embracing them, and are you hosting them? Like, our Western culture stinks, but primarily America, I guess that's what most of my experience is. But, like, we don't host people. Like, we deal with them, or we invite them over, but not to be inconvenienced. Whereas, like, in Eastern culture, I mean, they host people. They put on something. Right. There's some honor behind some of that stuff. And, like, we kind of threw the baby out with the bathwater and some of that stuff, where we just don't think about treating people in a way that says, hey, man, I want you here. I want you here, and I will do what it takes for you to be comfortable and for you to be, you know, feel like you are welcomed in this area. And, like, if we're fighting over where, you know, this somebody's butt is where my butt generally goes, like, that's ridiculous. I don't know. I mean, I do know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, here's the thing. The only reason that I brought it up is, like, sometimes it's hard to look at your gathering from the eyes of a guest. And frankly, I really struggle with this because, like, I know there's a lot of people on the other side of this than me, but, like, most of the time, I feel like church is for people that you've already talked to about Christ, and they're interested in discipleship, and now they're coming to join a community that's worshiping Christ. I'm not against guests seeking Christ because, frankly, that's where they know to get it, right? And so if they don't have someone close to them that is talking to them about Jesus, they know that that's available at most churches close to them. And so I'm not saying bar none, it's out, but, like, the just showing up and just checking things out crowd is, I feel like it's lazy discipleship anyway. Like, I feel like you should probably have talked to a guy and know a guy and the people around you. You're bringing them into that community opposed to them stumbling on it more often than not.
Yeah.
So here we go. We got time for one dear life from the path.
Yeah, for one, yep.
Dear life from the path. I love my husband. We've been married for 45 years, but if he isn't in control of the TV, he is unbearable. Even if someone else is watching TV, he will come in and demand to change the channel. If he falls asleep and we change the channel back, he gets mad when he wakes up. He'll change it back and immediately fall asleep again. I've tried to get him to understand he's being rude, but he does not agree. I realize this isn't a serious problem, but it's very annoying. Thanks for any suggestions you might have on this issue.
I'm really interested in his rebuttal. Like, when you say, hey, you're being ridiculous, what is it that he says?
It's my TV.
Like, how I don't know, how Archie Bunker do you have to feel in that circumstance?
Yeah, really.
That's pretty bad.
Well, so he's probably in his 60s. They've been married 45 years, right?
Yeah.
So in their 60s, your marriage isn't going anywhere. He's a grumpy guy. He's selfish. Deal with it. Go get your own TV.
Yeah, I would do one of two things. I would either move that TV in the bedroom and he can fall asleep in there all he wants, or you buy a TV and move into the bedroom and then you watch whatever you want.
Yeah, I'm on board with that.
Yeah, if it's about, you think no further attempts at conflict resolution?
I seriously, man, you've been married 45 years.
Just be reasonable. It's not going
to
work.
You go to hash this out. You know what I'm saying?
That's how it works in their marriage.
Yeah.
He's a TV man.
I mean, it's sometimes it's very awkward for me being only married, you know, almost 10 years now, being around people that have been married 30 because they are snarky with each other. And sometimes a little bit cut, you know, cut, and they'll say things that I'm like, ooh, I can't say that to my wife. But they've been married 30 years, and you can say that crap. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's okay. You know, it's not a big emotional breakdown, self-esteem problem like it was the second year of your marriage.
Yeah.
You know,
it's
like, hey, the place looks a mess, and it's usually your fault because you're a jerk.
It's like, the same argument they've had for 30 years.
Like, you know, like, it just stops cutting quite so deep, you know? Yeah. And so you put up with your husband falling asleep, waking up and going, Dick Van Dyke's all we watch, woman, and falling back asleep again.
Pick up those socks.
Yeah, I mean,
I do as I please.
It's not she's not saying, hey, I'm going to end this thing. She's like, what do I do about him? He's cranky. Yeah, he is.
Yep.
Here's what Secular has to say. Secular says, trying to reason with your husband won't work because what he's really doing is asserting himself as top dog in the household. I'm sorry you didn't ask me sooner because I could have saved you years of frustration by recommending you get a second television set in another room.
Oh, sweet.
I thought that was going to go worse.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say,
you should have left
saved
him.
You 6 years? I'm like, what are you saying? Leave him when you're like 20?
Yeah, yeah. do you guys have any of those? Do you have any of those in your marriage, Mike? Are you and Archie Bunker on something?
Stuff that I'm rough with?
Yeah.
Yeah. And actually, I've been trying to work through it lately. But there's nothing that irritates me more when I look over at my lady and she's on the phone.
Yeah.
Like, and she's not on the phone near as much as I think, but when I happen to look at her and she is, I'm like, I looked at you, pay attention to me. Mike wants attention.
Still, Mike's in the house.
So I just assume, like, I've said it, like, recently, I've been like, you're on the phone all the time. She's not on the phone all the time.
Yeah.
I just, like, want to look over lovingly, and she's, like, looking at her phone. I'm like, you're always on the phone. I'm like, I'm ridiculous. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm totally irrational about it.
Yeah. Yep,
I do the same thing with my daughter. She plays the Minecraft on the Kindle or something. You know, I'm like, that kid is always on the Kindle. Like, it's my wife's problem. And it's not even true. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's totally ridiculous to see yourself from 10 feet above. And you're like, man, that guy's an idiot.
Yeah. I had a couple Archie Bunker moments. One of them had to do with dinner. I can go to some stuff comes out of my mouth. But, like, we're working or whatever, and I come home and, like, you know, the problem is, like, my family snacks throughout the day. Like, they eat lunch and then they snack. They've eaten at, like, 3:30. I don't eat at 3:30, right? I haven't eaten since 11. And I get home, I'm like, man, I'm hungry. Where's eats? You know, and, like, no one has even considered eats. And then, like, whatever bouts of chauvinists live in my left toe, they say things like, why is not dinner in the process when I come home? And I thought, oh, man, gross.
Feed me a woman.
I said a gross thing there.
Sandwich.
But here's where I struggle, is there's part of me that's like, hey, no, seriously, I mean, it really would be awesome if there was some food available. And then I think, I mean, you can make it. And I thought, oh, man, no one wants me to make it. But I thought, here's the deal. If I just embrace the fact and said, you assume you're making dinner until you hear otherwise, I feel like that's going to solve my problem, right? Just start there.
Yeah.
Anyway, change your ways. You're listening to Live from the Path. Thanks for hanging out with us. We'll catch you next week. And, yeah, that's all. Go to bed, do something.